Hello again, everybody. Well, tonight I'm hoping to share some of my reflections on my sense of Zazen as a relinquishment practice, and to invite all of you to engage with what I'm talking about and see how it connects or doesn't connect with your own practice or questions that have arisen about your practice, so that in the end we can also open this up for you to share from your own experience. And I need to start by saying I'm really grateful to my practice, actually, that I'm here tonight to give this talk. Because over the weekend, our family lived through a very tragic event where my daughter's wife's father was killed. And he had frontal lobe dementia and was in a nursing home and was supposed to be in a locked unit, and someone left the door unlocked. And he walked out. He was hit by an Amtrak train and killed. So even telling you is disturbing to you. And so we've been through a lot, and I thought, well, I don't even know if I can give this talk tonight. But I remembered something Millard shared with me. About 3 weeks ago, he came in and he said, I was listening to a talk by Norman Fisher on a podcast, and Norman Fisher said, everyone in their life will experience something horrific. And I know that's not the exact words, but... and when Millard told me that, I thought, wow, that's pretty stark. And then I realized, I have this belief, or I have this hope, that maybe, you know, that won't happen to me. Everyone else, but not me. And so right here is an issue of relinquishment. Can I let go of that belief, and what would that mean? And then I realized, well, come on, I've already experienced something horrific in my life, and probably most of you too have. So, suffering is universal. So then Millard wrote me this little email afterwards, and he said, well, maybe this is a good message because it helps us understand that we're not separate selves, that we're all interconnected, and we're here to care for each other. And so I felt like relief, like I could come here, and I could know that all of you care. And somehow I felt a lot better even just imagining that, and now I'm here and my heart's not beating fast where I thought it might. So relinquishment, and what does this mean? And I don't know what you say if you're going to give a definition of relinquishment, but my sense is that it does mean letting go. It means putting something aside. It means not holding on to something really tight, letting it go. It means letting go of the need to control our lives. I know when my 16-year-old nephew died, this was many, many years ago, of an asthma attack, I was so distraught. And I sat in Zazen, and the words came, we can't control life. And just that was a huge relief. And that's a kind of relinquishment, letting go of thinking we're in charge of our life. Because really, what we're invited to practice in Zazen is to let go of the idea of a fixed self. So every moment we're invited to let go of what it is we might be thinking we are, or thinking is the truth, or being aware of our perceptions, and letting them go. So I have this picture of Enzo, because I don't know how many of you are familiar with this as a sort of symbol of Zen. It's a circle with an opening. And so relinquishment really is the practice of letting go so that we enter the opening. And we don't close things off with our fears or our beliefs or a way that we think we should be. So I just wanted to start tonight because in sewing on my robe for 2.5 years, the practice of sewing is to chant with each stitch, Namu Kie Butsu. And that means I'm throwing myself into the hands of the Buddha. And Myo, Leahy used to say, or at one point I heard him say, we're giving ourselves into the treasury of the light. So can you feel just that chant or just that mantra is a letting go? It's a relinquishing, really, of our whole life into the hands of the Buddha, into the emptiness of not knowing. So I guess the first practice I want to just offer all of us is this chant. Namu Kie Butsu. I'm throwing myself into the hands of the Buddha. And there's something about chanting it that is the importance of it, because we chant with each stitch, each part of the stitch, Namu Kie Butsu. Namu Kie Butsu. And Dogen says it's in everyday life that we realize the Buddha way. So we can take this chant into every moment, washing the dishes, taking a shower, putting out the trash, smiling at the person on the street, Namu Kie Butsu. So I guess I want to invite all of us to, just for a few moments, chant this together. And one of the amazing things about chanting is that when we chant together, we're bringing our whole body, our sound, our voice, our bodiness into the chant, but we're also listening to everyone else. So even in that listening, we're letting go of some false belief that we're just separate people here chanting, because we're resonating with everybody. So if you would feel comfortable, could we just take like about 5 minutes and we'll chant this chant together. Namu Kie Butsu. I'm throwing myself into the hands of the Buddha. Namu Kie Butsu. 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 And just take a moment to notice how that's affecting you. Something else about relinquishment that I've been learning, that that I have, we have this tendency to want to sort of maybe, how do you say it, like put different parts of your life in different sort of categories or boxes or parts of yourself maybe you don't even know, but there's usually some kind of way that we construct our lives. And yet, if we enter into this deep letting go and staying with the stitch or staying with the moment or staying with what's happening with your hands or what you're hearing, that there begins to have this experience of everything flowing together. Nothing's left out. There's a way that we're weaving our lives in this deeply whole way in this practice of letting go. So as Dogen says, our daily lives is the realization of ultimate reality. So it's just this. This moment, it's just sewing, it's just helping someone cross the street, and that's all. So also, there's something very embodied about this kind of letting go. The Satipatthana, which was sort of an early text that Vipassana meditation kind of grew out of, and it says that as humans, what's essentially true about being human is that we walk, we lie down, we sit, and we stand. Like that's sort of deeply embodied, but each of those, quote, positions are actually movements. And so when you think about it, even to take a step, we have to let go. To move into the next moment or the next moment. So even standing, we have to let go of control so that we can be still. So built into being a human being is this capacity to live into the next moment, to let go and to be present to what's there. So even breathing, you know, if we tried to control our breath, you know, it would be horrible. And in fact, many people who, you know, have had trauma or have a sudden, you know, scary experience, they stop breathing. They hold on and constrict. And so even our breath, the in and out, is another kind of letting go. So coming into the body. And Suzuki says, to take care of the exhalation is very important, the breathing out. To die is more important than trying to be alive. When we always try to be alive, we have trouble. Rather than trying to be alive or active, if we can be calm and die or fade away into emptiness, then naturally we will be all right. Buddha will take care of us. So again, this sense of letting go into the exhalation, being able to let go of holding on to any sense of control, letting go into emptiness, that's when there's more aliveness. So the thing is, though, this is still more challenging. It sounds maybe simple, but in a way it's still challenging because we have egos, and egos really are very tricky and sort of subtle. And so often I've found that the ego tricks me into taking over. So the ego moves in very fast and wants to be in control and wants everything to be figured out. So the ego wants to close the circle and have it all taken care of. So I was talking to a colleague friend of mine who's been studying Zazen, and she was like all excited because she suddenly had this question come up in her meditation practice, and the question was, how would I live my life differently if I brought my awareness of death into each moment? And the question?
No, what you just said, like that last sentence.
Oh, I'm sorry. Last sentence, let's see. I have a friend colleague who's beginning to study Zazen, and she was talking to me, and she was very excited because she had this great question arose in her Zazen. The question was, how would I live my life differently if I brought into my awareness the fact that we all die? This was her question. And, I mean, that's the question, right? So, but suddenly she started thinking about it, and she had like all these like interesting answers about how her life would be more meaningful, and she was going on, and then all of a sudden she realized, oh, there it is. There's my ego coming in and taking over and wanting to figure it all out, when actually what we're invited to do is to live with a question, to not answer it, to bring it into our practice with a kind of opening. And the question itself will begin to work on a deeper level. So, you know, being aware of the ego, I think that's part of our practice, learning how our ego works so that we can catch it. That's another kind of, we can't let go if we're not aware that the ego just took over. So, I mean, the ego also likes to act as if it's wise. So, one day I was like, kind of doing all these solitary things all day, and towards the end of the day I started to feel a little lonely. And so I was just aware of all of this, and then the next thing I know, before I knew, this part of me was saying, oh, this is terrible that you had such an imbalanced day, that you were solitary all day and that you got lonely at the end of the day. Now let's fix that, and let's make sure you have a balanced day every day. And make sure you have solitude and connection. And it's like, wait a second, there it goes again. You know, making something into a project rather than staying with what's arising and letting go. The ego also decides what we can and can't do. So this is another kind of awareness practice, like, and where do you tell yourself that what you want isn't possible? Where do you say things like, oh, maybe I'm too old? Or maybe you say something like, well, I can't do that. So we need to also be aware of where we restrict ourselves, where we're holding tight onto some belief about ourselves that's going to, like, keep us tight and constricted and not the possibility of freedom that we are being given. So what I appreciate about these sort of embodied awarenesses, where we can catch the ego wanting to make something into a form really fast. So, but we can tolerate living in this sort of, with our chanting, tolerate unformedness, tolerate not knowing, tolerate letting go completely into the hands of the Buddha. So I was making a joke about not looking at the other side of your handout because This is another thing the ego does. It wants to hurry up and figure out where we're going next. It doesn't want to, like, stay with, you know, sort of what's happening now and not knowing. So, and that happens when we read. Like, if we hit something that we don't understand in a sutra or whatever, we hurry up and read on. We skip over so that we can sort of figure out what we can understand. And so, so that was kind of my little way of pointing out. So, but turning your paper over.
Now we can do that now.
Yes, yeah, now you can turn your paper over. So another way to work with your awareness practices in terms of relinquishment, or this is what I've found helpful, is to practice with what are called the 8 worldly dharmas. Like, if you remember that Zazen is the practice of letting go of the object-seeking mind, letting go of this way our mind tends to create life in terms of opposites, dualities. So we have pleasure, pain, loss, gain, anonymity, fame, shame, blame, that a lot of times we're living in a sort of a fixed view on one side or the other of these opposites, and often we don't even realize it. But to become aware and help yourself move back and forth between the opposites will actually release the whole thing. So just to give you an example, when we were at Green Gulch Farm, some of us were there, and I hadn't been there in a while, but there were several of the monks that lived there that have meant something to me the other times I've been there, and I was so excited to see them. And it seemed as if they didn't remember me. And so for a while I was distressed, like, I want them to remember me. And then I remembered anonymity and fame. And I thought, oh, I'm living in anonymity now. And somehow I relaxed. It's like, oh, well, that's okay. What's that like? You know, so then the funny thing was, the next morning I woke up and I didn't have that angst anymore. And all of a sudden I went up to Sonia, and Sonia said, "Ah, I was just thinking about you last night. I'm so glad you're here." And then I was walking down this path and Suki was over there, and she goes, "Hey, hi." And so it was so weird that when I could be with anonymity and let that go, then the whole thing shifted. So that's the kind of relinquishment, because I let go of my hold on wanting the fame or wanting it to be known. But this is something I've found I have to work with. I have to remember these worldly dharmas. I have to wonder how my experience might be caught in one of them. So this is a little different kind of practice than the chanting. So I'm just sort of suggesting these different, sharing with you different ways that have worked with me to move towards this ongoing, over and over again, throwing our lives into the hands of the Buddha. Clem.
Yes, I have a question.
Yes.
I'm looking at these dharmas.
Yes.
And I notice here that, you know, there, you might kick. How close do I need to be? Am I good now?
That's good.
I hate these things. I can't hear it, okay?
Oh, so, okay.
No. I have a question about this. The 8 dharmas here are listed in pairs, like one you might consider favorable and one you might consider not favorable.
Right.
And I noticed that the first one, at least to my assessment, the first one is the only one that lists the favorable condition first.
Oh.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any significance to that.
That wasn't intentional. So,
It must be the hook to draw you in, right?
Pleasure, pain, loss, gain, anonymity, fame, shame, blame. Well, that could help.
No, the first one, pleasure, I would consider to be favorable. The rest of the first list, no.
Well, that's one. I mean, pleasure is, pain is one kind of duality or opposite.
Right.
And that's where the holding on and the turning away are embedded in all of that. We want the pleasure. We want to hold on to the pleasure. We want to turn away from the pain. And that's in all of these. You know, we want the gain, and then we want to hold on to it. We don't want the loss. And yet, if we can let go on either side, that's when something transforms or opens up, where the circle becomes free again. So I think, in a way, the turning away or the avoidance, in my understanding, is also a kind of clinging, because we want to hold on to what we want to get away from. And, you know, these things happen in very, very regular, everyday ways. Like on Saturday, I was looking out at these Tibetan prayer flags that are out here, and I became aware that I really don't like those prayer flags up there. And, you know, I could feel the irritation, and then I thought, oh, this is an aversion, Doralee. Stay with this a little bit. And so I stayed with it and sort of tried to sense, okay, well, I kind of like those prayer flags too. And, you know, it kind of felt a little softer. And then I walked outside where the prayer flags are, and suddenly I saw this whole row of beautiful trees with pink blossoms all over. And I realized I hadn't seen those trees because I was fixated on not liking these prayer flags. So it's like in every moment there's something like this that's kind of being presented to us where, you know, it's a holding on or a turning away, and it's fixed, and it's hard to let it go. But when we do, then everything opens up. So this practice and the chanting together, I think, can really support this, you know, the Dharma truth that, you know, enlightenment is here for all of us. And even the chanting, I found, comes in when I can't let go of something. Like, I know I have this thing where if my one daughter doesn't understand what I say, I have this, like obsessive argument that goes on in my mind, and I can't stop it. So I can't let it go, supposedly. But I started chanting. Whenever that would happen, I would start chanting, Namu Kye Butsu, Namu Kye Butsu, or Kanzeyan, Namu Butsuyo Butsu. And one morning, that's what I did. Every time that thought comes in, I started chanting. And then, you know, after a couple of hours, it broke through. And I was just in this sort of free space. So I couldn't directly let go, but the chanting came in and became an embodied way of putting my wholehearted energy into something that's beyond me. And just to end by bringing us back to our bodies, because another practice of relinquishment is bowing. And just that gesture, a whole body, not just thinking about something or noticing something, but embodying the bow, is another kind of letting go into something larger, and coming into the temple and bowing at the statue, at the altar, is a way of saying I'm letting myself go into something larger. We don't even know what it is, of course. And then when we take our refuges, and I won't read them all, but the way that we can practice this, and we practice it here, is we either can bow like this, or we can do a full prostration, and we say, I take refuge in Dharma. Before all beings, entering deeply the merciful ocean of Buddha's way. Entering deeply the merciful ocean of Buddha's way. So you can feel the words is the relinquishment, but also the bowing is a whole body letting go. And, you know, you might just notice at the end of our service, after we've bowed, what is something different for you? Can you feel some kind of energy there? I sometimes walk down the street and I'll in my mind bow to people. That's another way of letting go into this larger mystery. So we're throwing ourselves into the treasury of the light. Namu kiye butsu. Thank you for listening, and maybe just welcome anybody's sharing of their something in their life that's come up as I'm talking. Oops. There's a microphone.
So what do you think of, instead of thinking of it as letting go, thinking of it as opening? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no idea why, but the letting go to me sounds very deconstructive, sort of, I don't know. Opening to me sounds more embodied somehow, because it's a heart thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's right.
Well, it's important that, I mean, the language will resonate differently for different people, so we don't want to get sort of fixed on one way of saying it, but I can feel that too. I mean, we want to keep the circle open. We want to enter into beyond whatever we're bringing already, whatever our perceptions are we're thinking about, you know, but a deeper opening that's from the whole body. Yeah. Thank you for that. Sarah.
That involves me kind of opening, circling in.
Letting go connotes loss.
For me, yes.
Yeah. But opening is the gathering in of something
larger than myself.
Yes, so you too like that. Yes. I mean, there's wheel of life and death, I think the last link is a person with a corpse on its back. And so we tend to carry things that are burdensome, that in letting go, we're releasing something that has been weighted down. So that would be another way that for some people letting go would be very powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But opening. Peter?
It is interesting. I'm sorry, thank you.
It is interesting for me to realize that loss and gain, as I hear Sarah talk about loss, as if we're losing and gaining good things. And you do seem to be suggesting I could be losing pain or gaining pain. You know, it's and I don't need to know which. I
That's
just.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just that one-sidedness. that we're trying to work with, so that, you know, everything's included. Anybody else have something to say or a question, or Karen?
I think that I learned to translate this as "I take refuge in Buddha." Mm-hmm.
Namukhiye Butsu?
Yeah. Rather than you were saying what were you saying again? I throw myself into the hands of Buddha, which is also, you know, pretty exciting, I guess. But anyway.
Well, yeah, I guess it could mean that too. There's something about the wholeheartedness, I guess, in the throwing myself. That's how I have experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, we're choosing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you could also say I'm letting myself go, or I'm opening to Buddha.
Yes, and saying refuge is more like I'm opening to, or I'm. Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it seems wonderful that we're finding the words that speak to us.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the way these words rhyme and the meaning, and I've experienced acceptance as a letting go. And I didn't think of it that way. It just seemed to be something that was the way to be, or the way to go. And I also was able to experience a loss as a gain, and just to be able to see that accumulation of memories or accumulation of anything can be dead weight after a while. And so, yeah, it's very enlightening to be able to see my way through the conditions that have bound me, and how just a simple fresh look at the same words that I had given life to or given meaning to, all of a sudden those words have a reverse effect. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah. Thank you. What we may think is a loss could actually be a gain, or the other way around. And so that's the opening again. That's the not closing the circle and think we've got to figure it out, but it's staying with how it arises in the next moment.
Who would have thought that accepting would be letting go?
Mm-hmm.
Until one really looks at it, it does have that.
It does.
That effect.
Yeah.
Or that appearance.
Mm-hmm. Letting it be as it is, I guess that's another kind of way to say it. Let everything be as it is, allowing everything to be. And then there's not holding on to anything. Mm-hmm. Right. And even, I know my teachers worked with me a lot of around not holding on to what I think I do best. that we can get trapped in the fame gain kind of place where I'm really good at this, and then I keep being good at it and good at it, and then, you know, well, what about, what else is there? What about something that I don't even know about?
You've got to check the water in your car and the problem.
Right. All right. And what happens if we value something we're not good at? And see what happens. There's all these categories, and how do we come back to the open circle?
Doralee, do we have time for one more?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I just want to say thank you for tonight's talk. It was really powerful for me, and I related, I feel like, with a lot of the way that you worded your experiences and your practice. And I was at a retreat recently, like a two-day retreat, and there was another Namu Daibosa chant that was done, and it was powerful. It was the first time that I'd really ever experienced chanting being.
Uh-huh.
Very powerful.
Uh-huh.
Because it was it just took me right into the just thisness. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was like embodied, you know, instead of kind of being half here and half somewhere else. Had that kind of effect, and in the joining, like hearing the words, this listening, you know, from all directions happening.
Yes.
And so I'm gonna use this one too. But it is interesting how different words can, if you really pay attention to each word, how really dissect it, you know, what is this really asking of me to do? But in one last note, quick note, that this is really helpful for me as well, because there's this just been this deeper level of like seeing happening within myself in my own mind. And how subtle, you know, it really is, and tricky. And you know, I mean, at any one moment, it's like all of these are actually happening. You know, there's this like, oh, I want to speak because I want to, you know, make Doralee feel good, or you know, we should contribute, or but I'm afraid, you know, it'll be painful to talk. What if I say something stupid, or you know, or this loss of self, but then this gain of, you know. I don't just always, or it's just wild, you know, but it's also like we talk to each other like this, mm-hmm. like you do that well, and I'm working on this, and I shouldn't have done that, and I should, you know, it's like we literally talk like this to each other, which just perpetuates the sense of self, separate selfness, and so it's difficult to break out of it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, thank you. And I just to pick up on the chanting again, I mean, you know, sometimes maybe we chant and we're just kind of going through the motions. Maybe it feels like that sometimes, or you're thinking, why are we chanting this whole long, you know, sutra thing that, you know, is so wordy, or whatever we have our criticisms of. But I've learned that these chants go in on another level, on this embodied level that's below our consciousness. So I might be in the middle of something, and a chant will come up that seems to be what I need in that moment. So, you know, it's an investment in a way to chant, and even if we don't understand what we're chanting at a certain point, or to work with, I was talking to Susan about how the dual mirror samadhi is like a bullion cube of the Dharma. And so, you know, you can chant it over and over again, and, you know, it doesn't compute in a certain way, but if you live it over time, you begin, your body begins to get a sense of what it means. So it's an investment, this chanting.
I was thinking about the controversy that arose tonight about letting go versus opening.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to offer something about that.
Sure.
That came to me. It's like you can have like both things work, because it's let go of I, me, and mine. Open to Buddha. Open to awakening. So, you know, it's two sides of the practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think they both are efficacious.
Right. Thank you.
And then another offering on the translation of Namu Kiye Butsu. I learned it. With each stitch, I plunge into Buddha. Mm-hmm. I plunge into Buddha. Mm-hmm. That's the way I learned.
Yeah, yeah.
So, different ways.
Different ways. Yeah.
Not always so.
Thank you all very much.